The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
Hello and welcome to Sunday night's edition of the Football Social Daily. 9 games in total across the last 48 hours and yet more moving and shaking at both ends of the Premier League table. The title picture does remain the same pretty much as Liverpool picked up 3 points at Brighton, but Jurgen Klopp's side have piled the pressure back onto Manchester City as the gap is now down to 3 points as Pep goes to Crystal Palace tomorrow night. But elsewhere, there's still plenty going on. The battle for top four continues at pace as all 4 key runners and riders won this weekend, including, in case you haven't heard it, but let's be honest, you probably have heard about it, a record-breaking afternoon for Mr. Cristiano Ronaldo up against Tottenham. Big return to Premier League action for Ronaldo. And then down the bottom, we are looking at yet more twists and turns in the road of the relegation dogfight. Crucial wins for Brentford, Leeds, their first one under Jesse Marsh, and Watford, but more misery for Lampard and Sean Dyche as the drop zone lingers large. Right then, plenty as always to get through on the Sunday night show. In part one, it's Ronaldo against Spurs, plus Chelsea's late win over Newcastle. Part two, it's those crucial games down the bottom as we check in on the latest picture in the relegation battle. And then to wrap it all up, we'll be rounding up the other action from another busy weekend in the Premier League. Right then, my name's Fergal Brennan, and joining me on Sunday duty tonight, we have Newcastle fan and football broadcaster Isha Acton. Isha, how's things?
Yeah, great, thanks. It's great to be on.
Wonderful stuff. First defeat in a while for Newcastle, but positive signs still to look at. We're going to be jumping into that as game number two after United. And at Old Trafford yesterday for a record-breaking afternoon for Ronaldo, we have freelance football scribe Pete Hall. Pete, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Good to be on.
Very good. Can I just ask a question about Old Trafford? Did you see any grown men doing the suit celebration? And if you did you report them to the police?
Yeah. Not only that, have I witnessed recently, I actually witnessed in a bar that had shuffleboard on, somebody celebrating a win on shuffleboard with a suit celebration.
Wow.
I was like, I'm out of here. Sorry, I'm not paying my bar tab. I'm off.
I think that's fair enough. Yeah.
I'm not staying in this establishment any longer.
No, I think that's pretty reasonable. But in fairness to Ronaldo, he had plenty of reason himself to be celebrating last night. 8:07 and not out in terms of goals, Pete. That makes him, now I'm going to get the wording right on this so I don't upset Pele. Yep. On the off chance that Pele is listening, Cristiano Ronaldo is now the top goal scorer in the history of internationally recognised games by FIFA in men's football. So he's got 8:07. Pele's claiming that he's got 1,200. We're not going to get into Pele. We're just going to talk about Ronaldo because this was massive. And it was, everything about this just absolutely screamed Cristiano Ronaldo. He missed the derby last weekend. There was controversy over his potential injury, which Ralf Rangnick has to answer questions about. He went off to Portugal for a little holiday, comes back, comes straight into the starting lineup, and for me, turns in a performance that arguably nobody else in the Premier League could. 3 goals, brilliant performance, 3 points for United, get themselves back into the top four before being knocked out by Arsenal earlier today. This was incredible stuff by Ronaldo, it really, really was, and sets United up, hopefully, for a strong end to the campaign.
At 3 very different goals as well. It's the performance that had absolutely everything. What a header that was at the end. Like a League One centre half up for a corner. Absolute bullet of a header. The strongest neck muscles around. One of the best leapers in the game, to be honest. The way he meets the ball and the direction and the power that he gets behind it. It's just unfathomable, really. You know, a 37-year-old can do that. And it was an incredible performance that dragged a very poor United side over the line. I mean, it really does mask overall was a pretty poor performance from United. At the back, they were all over the place. Other than Jadon Sancho and Fred, to a man, United were pretty poor. And this was what was supposed to happen, though. This was the dream that all fans had when Ronaldo returned, that Ronaldo was going to pull this stuttering giant, underperforming Manchester United out of the depths of despair, back to the, restore them to their grandeur, and he was the man that was going to lead them to it, and he was back home. And but it's not happened enough. It was amazing to see. It was amazing to be part of. But these were the sort of occasions that were supposed to happen with more regularity. And the reason it happened was because I think Roy Keane said it afterwards as well, is that he was hungry yesterday. He was starving, Ronaldo. He wanted that. He wanted that record. It's what he lives for. He wanted those goals. And when you keep him out the side, when you tell him he's finished, when the chips are down, that's when you get the best out of Cristiano Ronaldo. The problem is he doesn't realise his limitations, and if he's playing three times a week, he can't do it. He's 37 years old. Yes, he's not like most 37-year-olds. He's fitness-wise, he's absolutely incredible shape. But if you keep him out, you know, if you play him once, the reason I don't think Ronaldo has worked is he's simply been playing too much. He's simply been playing too often, and he can't do it. He can't do it three games a week at 37, no matter what physical condition you're in. If you play him once a week, rotating with Edinson Cavani, I think it could have worked out. And the reason why we've only seen days like Saturday on this rare, you know, being such a rare occasion, is for this reason.
Is this kind of the story of Ronaldo's season back at Manchester United? I can't believe, Pete, I'm going to kind of ask you this, but these types of performances, as incredible as it was for Ronaldo at Old Trafford yesterday, this is almost par for the course when you're dealing with one of the greatest footballers in history, turning in this type of a performance, in this type of a game, with the pressure on him, with these questions swirling around about various things to do with his involvement at Manchester United. But strangely, the questions that have been fired at Ronaldo at various points this season haven't actually stopped, because the people asking those questions, not necessarily doubting Cristiano Ronaldo, but questioning his role, questioning, as you said, when he should be rotated in and rotated out, they've not gone away. All Saturday underlined is just the sheer amount of ability that Ronaldo has, but the questions remain. And Ralf Rangnick has to get those right to ensure that United end the season with something.
Exactly. It's the fact that you can have occasions like that doesn't mean that Ronaldo has been a success. Yes, he was a success on Saturday. Yes, he was a success when he was rescuing United in the Champions League at Atalanta, at home and away, at Villarreal with a 94th-minute winner, and the whole crowd goes absolutely berserk. Yes, there's four or five, six occasions this season when it's worked, but the rest of the time is when you see to the detriment of the team what he doesn't bring to the table, and what people it's been widely reported that he doesn't do the work rate that others do in his position. We've seen the tantrums when he's been brought off, which is reflects negatively on the team. He goes to Portugal when he's not been permitted to go, not setting the best example perhaps to younger players. So yes, there's a lot of baggage that comes with Ronaldo, and it's the problem is for United is they've made a rod for their own back, because if you look at Manchester United's Twitter account now, for example, it's just the Ronaldo propagating account. All it is is just Ronaldo is the GOAT. Ronaldo is this. Ronaldo is that. It's all about him, because they've got to make the money back that they've invested in him wages wise. It was as much a marketing signing as it was for what happens on the pitch. And it's an impossible situation for Ralf Rangnick, because the club will essentially tell him that he's got to play often, because there's a lot of people around the world wanting to see that.
Rangnick issue in his own post-match press conference said that there's never been an issue with Ronaldo, that the situation is being managed by himself and the club. Paul Pogba echoed that in his interview after the game, where he said, "You're dealing with the greatest player ever. How could there ever be a problem with that?" To kind of put the kibosh on his views on those questions. But Ronaldo himself said there's no limits to where Manchester United can finish this season. there is limits. That's a bit of confidence from him. There is obviously limits. So Isha, looking at the position that they're in, they've taken on Atletico Madrid in midweek in the Champions League. They're out of both domestic cups. They're not going to win the Premier League. It's the potential for the Champions League and the potential for qualifying for the Champions League in the Premier League. Now, Ronaldo has to say these things, and he's just walked off the pitch after breaking a world record. Where are their limits? Not to massively disagree with Ronaldo, but there is some limits.
I think it's tough because we're talking about a totally different Man United to what we have seen in recent days. Like, this is a big turnaround. Let's be real. Last week, I was reanalyzing all the rumors about Ronaldo. I'm like, no, it can't be an injury. He can't be in Portugal. I'm sure there's something about Alanga getting started over him. You know, there were a lot of questions asked about his absence and him not starting. It was a big deal. Now, I'll hold my hands up. I think, look, there's no denying Ronaldo's not been performing at the level that he's expected to perform. But when people are saying that he's finished, I guess we can't ignore the fact that he is probably playing in the most dysfunctional United team of the last decade. I think, you know, it's the most difficult league in the world, and he's still winning games. He's still dragging the team. He demonstrated that today with his skill, his determination. We saw Ronaldo all over the pitch, in defence, in midfield, just leading the attack. He was everywhere. And you'll still find the people telling you that they are limited to what they can do, and he, you know, there are a lot of critics for him. He's struggled like every other United player the last few months, and he'll continue to struggle despite the hat trick. I think, like Pete said, age isn't on his side. He's 37 years old. And in terms of limits, if Man United do turn into a one-man team and they are heavily reliant on Ronaldo, he simply can't play every 3 days. He needs to be used sparingly. He needs to remain fresh to get the best results out of him, although I expect he won't ever accept that. Yesterday against Spurs, he looked like a totally different player after a week off. And I think the hat trick, it will shush a lot of the critics for sure, but we kind of still need to look at the bigger picture at Man United, because their current situation, it is kind of dire. For one, the defence needs to majorly raise the standard, and that's a huge limitation to have, regardless of Ronaldo. I'd say Ronaldo's come alive at the perfect time, but he still needs some service. He's their top scorer. Without them and David De Gea as well, they wouldn't really be in the knockout stages of the Champions League. So the critics can't really ignore that. But again, it comes down to, yeah, overall, they are limited, especially if they can't rely on Ronaldo every 3 days.
Before we move on to Chelsea and Newcastle, Isha, I just want to ask you quickly about Tottenham. Another day, another game, another Conte bingo. The roller coaster continues. They haven't won back-to-back games in all competitions so far in 2022, and it is just one step forward and two steps back. But there did almost seem to be almost a sideshow of Spurs being there yesterday, because there was so much focus on Ronaldo. But when you break down some of the stats from their performance, it doesn't make particularly pleasant reading. Harry Kane gets a goal from the penalty spot, and Harry Maguire knocks in an own goal. Aside from that, just two shots on target throughout 90 minutes. And as Pete mentioned in his piece there, United were not excellent, aside from Ronaldo's brilliant goals, Sancho, Fred pulling their weight in midfield. There was a sense that United were there to be got at, maybe if you're not running into Ronaldo in superhuman form. But Tottenham just couldn't match up to that. They end the weekend still in eighth. They're off the pace in the Europa League, and they're definitely off the pace in the Champions League. And this just piles more frustration on for Conte.
Yeah, I think frustration is the key word here. I mean, okay, aside from the individual brilliance of Ronaldo, what can Spurs look back on that game and reflect on? Like you say, one goal from a Man United own goal, and I think the other one, I don't know, I mean the other one from a penalty, obviously. I think both teams, like you say, slightly underwhelmed aside from Ronaldo. I'd argue that Conte maybe kept Son on for far too long. He subbed off their best player, Kulusevski, who I really saw something happening from him. I think Spurs, they were certainly more competitive in this fixture against Man United than what we saw when they were under Nuno in October. But as always with Spurs, when they really need a result, I think they just can't get over the line. And I think that's sort of a long-standing weakness at Spurs that Conte hasn't quite yet been able to change. No doubt they'll probably get a few more, maybe a few more. I think the roller coaster will continue from now until the end of the season. And I think the top four looks well beyond them. I reckon top six isn't out of reach for them. which in itself really would be an achievement given their really eventful, chaotic season. I think if the players can show enough in the remaining games to just convince Conte to stay at the club for the next season, I think he'll stay. I feel like he probably finally realises that this is not really his team. He's really inherited a team mid-season, and he's doing the best he can with what he's got. Of course, he's going to voice his frustrations, and we saw a few weeks ago where he came out and sort of, I don't know, insinuated that they need to be offering more in order for him to stay type situation. I think if he's able to bring in players that he believes fits the system, if I were a Tottenham fan, I would trust him. And despite the inconsistent results in recent months, no doubt it's going to be a rough roller coaster for them from now until the end of the season. But if they manage to get top six and if they secure Europa League, I think Conte will be able to just pull in some players when it comes to the summer transfer window and they'll be all right. But frustrating really is the word here with Spurs.
An important 3 points for Chelsea at home to Newcastle, Pete. 1-0 win. Kai Havertz getting one just before the end of normal time. In reality, a little bit of a frustrating afternoon for Thomas Tuchel on the pitch. They couldn't get a shot on target until 78 minutes. And a bit of luck involved with Havertz, because there was a bit of controversy where he could have been sent off. But similarly to Ronaldo, there's only one story surrounding Chelsea at the moment, and that is the ongoing sanctions at Stamford Bridge that have basically stripped the club back to real basic functioning. Now, Thomas Tuchel was asked again about it after the game, and he said there's no way he will be leaving the club before the end of the season. He said, "I have to be honest, we are operating day to day and waiting for updates on a daily basis." Now, this is a bit of an expected statement that he will stay at the club between now and the end of the season. We're almost at the end of the campaign, but it does have its relevance in terms of the fans getting that little bit of assurance. Now, he has a lot of plates in the air, similarly to Ralf Rangnick, but more because he's still fighting across three fronts. They're well placed to get into the top four, but not assured. They're still in the FA Cup and they're still in the Champions League. He's got a big job on his hands to balance all of these variables that are floating around and make sure that Chelsea are still getting results on the pitch.
He has, yeah. And he's got a hell of a lot to deal with. But I think he's handled himself very well. I've been very impressed with him, really, because the problem with all this is, and we've seen it in several situations at different clubs, is that the managers are the ones that have to front up. You never get directors or chairmen coming out to answer the difficult questions that the managers are facing. And Thomas Tuchel has lost his rag a few times this season with some of the questions that he's been getting. And to an extent, yes, you know, when you take a job at a club like this, when you have backers, when you have owners like that, then you have to expect questions like this. But I think he's been right to say, I think he's answered them with plenty of dignity, and he sort of said, "What do you expect me to say? You know, I'm the manager. I don't know the ins and outs of these things, and I'm the one that's having to front up for these things." I think it's a little bit unfair, really, on Tuchel. I think, you know, it's right that these questions are asked, but perhaps to the wrong person. It's up to someone else at Chelsea. It's up to someone for Abramovich. It's up to Bruce Buck. It's up to somebody to step up and answer the questions on behalf of Tuchel rather than throwing the manager out there every time. So it's a hell of a lot to do with it. He's right to suggest that it does change day to day. It's not a cop out answer. That he's not. It's an unprecedented situation. Not just in terms of Chelsea, but in terms of what's happening in Ukraine. It's literally changing by the second. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We don't know what the situation is going to be like in the world in a week's time. So it does make it impossible for him. But he also, I think he was quite pointed when he said, for him, in a way, as a person, as a coach, very little has actually changed, because he's not as a coach now these days. He's not in charge of thinking about the players to sign for next season. He's not in charge about thinking of getting Antonio Rudiger or other players to sign new contracts. He's in charge of the day-to-day running of the club, to coach Chelsea and to get the current players performing at the maximum level. In theory, as long as they can get to Lille by Megabus or what other mode of transport they're going to have to row across the channel, then his task has not changed very much at all, and he is just managing day-to-day basis, coaching the players. But it must be incredibly distracted. And they played like a team that was distracted today, that had a lot of other things going on, a lot of other things on their minds, because, you know, you can't escape it. But his job, his hardest task, is to keep his players focused and try and focus on the pitch and not get dragged into other things off it.
An end to Newcastle's Premier League unbeaten run in 2022. Isha, 6 wins and 2 draws in Premier League action so far in the calendar year. That's dragged Newcastle right out of the relegation mire. But I think Pete's right. Distraction was the word here. Huge distraction for Chelsea. But that also filtered in to Newcastle, because Eddie Howe was questioned about various things. And the Newcastle players seem to be almost feeding off that distracted energy in this game. It was a pretty poor game all in all. Very few chances at either end before Havertz eventually nicked it. And despite the fact this is frustrating, and Newcastle have now lost that unbeaten run in the Premier League in 2022, is it really a big derailment for where Eddie Howe's looking to move Newcastle? Does this result have any major bearing on whether Newcastle will stay in the Premier League next season?
I mean, I guess in the grand scheme of things, it's not the end of the world. I think given our form a few months ago, we put up a good fight against Chelsea. You would not have seen that in December, in November. We only got our first win of the season in December. Imagine us playing Chelsea around about that time. I think we did really, really well. And morale's high, confidence is high, the belief is there. We've got these new signings, and we've also, well, Eddie Howe has rejuvenated existing players. I'm really happy with all of that. But I have to say, yeah, I was really disappointed today with this Chelsea game. Not because of the performance, just because of the decisions that went against us. I do think we were hard done by. And, you know, to end our 9-game unbeaten run in that fashion, it's not cool. I wouldn't have minded if it was us, you know, in error or, a bad day at the office, but it wasn't. I do think we battled hard, and okay, there weren't a lot of chances created, but I was happy with our performance. I was just disappointed with that late winner. I have to say, obviously, Kai Havertz, he's in the form of his life right now. I'd say that goal was really sort of a Bergkamp-esque, amazing control. The finish, it was simply world class, and even the ball from Jorginho was brilliant. But I do think Havertz should have been sent off. If not, there was a Stonewall penalty that wasn't given on the Chiloba and Murphy challenge. And then, of course, Havertz goes on to score the winner in the dying minutes. I think it was a very unfortunate way to end our 9-game unbeaten run. Yeah, I think we deserved a point. Hard done by, like I said. I thought Bruno and Dan Burn, they were outstanding. But I guess on to the next. It's okay. I think we can keep up the momentum. It's just a minor blip. And we are on the right road to safety. It's just a shame. Yeah, I was really disappointed with the officiating today.
Yeah, tough one to take for Newcastle to end their unbeaten run in 2022. So Chelsea end the weekend in third, 28 games played, 59 points on the board. Manchester United end in fifth, 29 games played, 50 points, and Newcastle's position stays the same. 14th, 28 games played and 31 points on the board. Right, we're going to grab a quick break here on the Football Social Daily, and from the glamour of the title race and the top four battle to the grit and grind of the relegation battle. Some massive, massive wins this weekend. Back-to-back victories for Brentford. Norwich probably are going to be slipping down because Jesse March picked up his first win as Leeds boss. Watford are not giving up without a fight. 2-1 win for them away at Southampton. But Frank Lampard is in more trouble. Everton 1-0 defeat at home to Wolves. We're going to be reviewing all of those games and looking at what it means for the bigger relegation picture in just a second.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Hello and welcome back to Sunday night's edition of the Football Social Daily. As always, regular listeners to the podcast will know that we are your one-stop shop for all things Premier League. If you hit subscribe on this episode, you can get access to a brand new show every single day. As the Premier League campaign winds up, we are here every day with a daily podcast. And you can also check out updates on your team available via Amazon Alexa or Google Home and on the Sports Social website, www.sport-social.co.uk. You can check out the latest news on your team every day. Right, we're going to spin back to the Premier League action this weekend. Pete, down the bottom, Brentford 2, Burnley 0. Massive win for Brentford. Difficult to understate just how important this is in terms of building confidence and pulling them away from the relegation battle. Despite doing pretty well in the first half of the campaign, this is the first time they've got back-to-back wins. Ivan Toney getting himself two more really important goals. That's 7 in 5 for him. Christian Eriksen providing that bit of creativity that they need. When we look at the table, 40 point used to be the old Sam Allardyce thing. You need 40 points to stay in the Premier League. The actual maths now says it's more like 36-37. Brentford are looking really, really good. And these types of games that could just drift off to a 0-0 and then mean that you're in trouble in April, if you can get a win in this game against a difficult Burnley side that have been there, done that, bought the T-shirt, that's a big, big boost. And Brentford look to be on the right road to safety.
Yeah, huge. Great timing to find the form, and great timing for Ivan Toney to find his scoring touch. Well, you know, when he came up to the Premier League, he came up with a massive reputation. My Brentford colleagues have often told me just how good he is. Like, all saying he's too good for Brentford. And then the start, you know, 6 months into the Premier League season, I'm thinking, really? Like, you know, like he. He shows glimpses, but he's in the games that I've covered Brentford this season, he's gone missing for long periods of time, and he's a bit like Jamie Vardy in a way. Jamie Vardy doesn't get involved in the build up play as such. He's not really he often gets the stats where he's only touched the ball 12 times a game, but that's kind of what Toney does as well. He kind of plays to his strengths, and he had to wait a long time for that chance against Burnley. You know, he didn't get a sniff really all game. And then he just got that perfect Christian Eriksen cross onto his head. And the sign of real quality is when you get those one moments in the moments that really matter, you put it away. And it was a brilliantly placed header, calmly placed header as well. He could have easily fluffed his lines, and that proves his quality. And Thomas Frank is always saying how he's the best penalty taker in the world, and he's got such a strange style of penalty. Like, he doesn't look at the ball. He's always looking at the goalkeeper the whole time. Takes a very short run up, and he just gets that little bit of a loft on the ball that can take it away from a goalkeeper. And it's a fantastic style. I don't know how you would even if you did your homework try and save those kind of penalties. But what a huge win at the right time as well. And I thought that Brentford would get dragged into it, but on Saturday was the big one. That was the big one that they need. But it could have. It shows the fine margins. You know, when you're down there, if that J. Rodriguez strike goes in, then it's a different ball game, isn't it? And it's those moments that can define a season. And Brentford took their moments when they came. And they're not necessarily safe. They can still get dragged into it. But you know, it's even with Watford's win, it takes some turnaround now for them to go down.
And they're top of the form table in terms of the bottom six sides, 7 points in the last five games. And we're starting to see little gaps opening up down the bottom. Brentford in 15th on 30 points, and Leeds, who we're going to touch on in a second, despite them winning, they're only on 26 points. So there's a 4-point gap, and Leeds would have to overhaul that. So the signs are looking positive for Brentford. Isha, I'm not going to be a hypocrite about Burnley. I've been backing Burnley to stay up, and I'm sticking with it. I'm not panicking. Three defeats in a row, they haven't scored in three games, and probably the big takeaway stat alongside not scoring, they're the only team in the Premier League to average less than one shot on target per game. I still think Sean Dyche's way of doing things is enough to scrap and just about keep their heads above water, because similarly to what Pete was just saying there about Ivan Toney, Sean Dyche knows his job, the Burnley players know their job, they won't panic, there's no pressure for them to finish any higher than 17th at this stage of the season. But they need to get themselves back on track, and by hook or by crook, they need to find a goal.
Yeah, you're right. I think 2 weeks ago I was asked to predict the bottom three, and purely because of Burnley's grit than their fight and their ability to produce draws, I thought, no, they'll be safe. They always manage to scrape it. They're fine. But now after this Brentford game, where I didn't really expect this turnaround from Brentford, I'm not going to lie. I think with Burnley, I just think they're really missing Ben Mee. I think they're missing him big time. They just look poor defensively without him. And that was a really strong point of theirs. Massive changes are needed at Burnley for sure. The new owners, you know, they've taken over Burnley and now Burnley are in free fall. You could say it's probably the previous owner's fault. They've not really done enough over the past few years to improve the squad. And the new owners have at least brought in Cornet and Veghorst and players that probably wouldn't have joined under the previous owners. So aside from that, I think a massive clear out is needed. And with three consecutive losses now, I don't think it's looking good for them. I'd say Burnley, Everton, Leeds, they're all equally at risk of joining Watford and Norwich in the relegation zone. It'll be interesting to see which of these three stay up. Something in me, I have to agree with you. I think Burnley, they've just got enough like grittiness to just scrape through compared to Everton, which we'll talk about, and probably Leeds as well.
Well, looking at Burnley's situation and Everton's situation, Burnley, Pete, could be forgiven for saying it could be worse. We could be Everton, because Burnley have lost three and haven't scored in three. Everton have lost four and they haven't scored in four. 1-0 defeat at home to Wolves. Liverpool fan and ex-Liverpool Academy player Connor Cody with the winner, just to rub a bit more salt in the Evertonians' wounds and just make things a little bit more difficult for Frank Lampard. It almost seems like everything he tries, and I don't think he's tearing up the rule book at any stage at Everton, and nor has he since he's come in, but anything he tries, nothing seems to work. He can't get the players that he needs fit back in the team. He can't get his experienced players to maybe dig in and show a bit of leadership. Nothing is going right, and they're in big, big danger.
Oh, big time. Big time. I mean, I was, you know, it's easy to say now, isn't it? I've never been a particularly big advocate of Frank Lampard, to be honest, and I think that his CV he shouldn't be getting the jobs that he does with his CV. But he obviously talks a good game, lives off his reputation of being a player, being an amazing player, and I don't think he realised what he was getting himself into, to be quite honest. At Everton, it's not only is it a big old job, but they expect big things at Everton. And when things aren't going well, it's a very toxic place to sit. You saw the reaction. The players were going over to supporters at the end at Goodison to clap them and, you know, holding their hands up, you know, trying to plead for mercy. And there wasn't much mercy coming back. Put it that way. And it's a very difficult situation to be in. And often there's a team that towards the end of the season, the one that gets in the worst form can really get into, you know, end up in free fall and go down. And that old adage that, you know, you're too good to go down, that will be the biggest one, won't it? You know, Everton in Premier League history, you know, for a team of Everton's size with the players that they've got as well, the money that they've spent, you know, £500 million on the current squad over the years under Moshiri. So it's, yeah, I think as, you know, as a non-fan, I think it'd be hilarious for Frank Lampard to take this side of Everton's ilk down. And he's got a hell of a job to turn things around, because if teams around him continue to, you know, find some results, they're going to be in big, 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 big trouble.
I just wanted to ask you, looking at their position in the Premier League, because they do have this record of never being relegated for the Premier League, and you're a veteran of the Northwest football patch. They have had final day escape act probably pre-David Moyes, maybe once or twice during David Moyes' tenure, where they're in big, big danger. They haven't really been on the cusp of relegation for some time. Just looking back through their previous seasons, the last time they've even finished close to the relegation zone was 2004, but that hasn't always been the picture for Everton in the Premier League. Sometimes we do get a bit of recency bias. You go back to the early noughties and the late 90s, they were in this position on a bit more of a regular basis. Is this the worst position that they've maybe ever been in? We talk about this record that they've never been relegated from the Premier League. Is that because maybe they've never actually been in as dire a straits as they are now, or certainly not for the best part of two decades.
You would talk when you're talking about the Everton that nearly got rated in the early days of the Premier League, you know, and Graham Stewart saving them on the final day of the season, then that's a very different Everton to now. Why it's such a toxic place to be, and why they're in a worse position than they were then is simply the money that they've spent and the mismanagement of the club over the last 10 years or so. Just poor decisions, wrong managerial appointments, going for big names that were never going to work out. I think one of the most interesting stories in football in recent years is the previous managers that have taken over at Everton. You know, you got the current Belgian manager, then it went to the current Netherlands manager, then Carlo Ancelotti, you know, who steered Everton to 10th and then got the Real Madrid job. It's absolutely, and then got Rafa Benitez after that. It's absolutely, you know, former Liverpool manager. Yes, if you can get these, you know, big names in, but you've got to think about whether they fit the club and whether it will work. And I personally think that Frank Lampard is another appointment that they've got entirely wrong, and they're expecting too much of a manager that I personally don't think he's qualified for the job. They're a huge club, and they could have the pick of top young coaches, whether British coaches, whether abroad, and they've gone for a name again. In my opinion, they've gone for a big name again, and it just stinks of yet another appointment that the Everton hierarchy have got massively wrong, and that's why the fans are so unhappy. Not necessarily with Lampard, they were quite pleased to get him in, but the mismanagement of the club over the last 10 years is staggering, and that Everton team in the early 90s that was hovering around relegation and perhaps a bit later than that as well, never had the standard of the players that they've got now as well, and the money that's been spent on those players. So two very, very different teams. And I just, the other thing you've got to worry about with Everton is look at their fixtures, look at their running. They're the teams that they've still got to play. And it makes their game in midweek against Newcastle at home like the very definition of a must win. They cannot afford not to win that game.
Moving across from the negativity of Frank Lampard to the positivity of Jesse March, Isha. First win for the American in terms of his role at Elland Road. Packed Elland Road, a loud Elland Road is a force to behold for Leeds when they are looking positive and they're pushing for a big result. 2-1 win at home to Norwich. That injects a bit of positivity into them right at the right time. They did have to ride their luck a little bit. Kenny McLean scored to equalise for Norwich on 91 minutes, and then Joe Geldhart popped up in the 94th minute to win it for them, and Elland Road went absolutely bananas. This is all about momentum. We talked about Brentford and positive momentum of them moving in the right direction, Everton moving in the wrong direction. March, with this win and with the type of character that he is and the type of fan base that he's going to be working with at Leeds, that momentum could just create a bit of a whirlwind and drag them away from this situation. There's probably going to be big questions to be answered this summer in terms of recruitment, players that are going to stay at Leeds and players that might be moving on. But if he can get them energised for the games that are remaining between now and the end of the season, at a point where Everton are going in the opposite direction and potentially one or two others are going in the opposite direction, Leeds should whisper it, but they should be okay.
Yeah, I agree. And like I said, I was asked about this a couple of weeks ago, just when March was recruited. And my first thought really was that all the poor performing teams at the lower end of the table, we've all had managerial changes, and, you know, Watford, Norwich, us at Newcastle, even Everton. And I thought, wow, Leeds have probably left it too late. But I don't want to get too ahead of myself. I think they might be okay, because firstly, this game was way more exciting than I expected. I think it was the best game of the season for Leeds, actually. That last 10 minutes was madness. I think Leeds could have been 4-5-0 up. Geldhart, he scored the 94th minute winner, like you said, after the equaliser. It was just 3 minutes prior. It was a great game of football. I think Leeds were the deserving winners, but they didn't make it easy for themselves. I don't think they often make it easy for themselves. Rafinha, I think he got really unlucky to not score in the game, but he made that really important assist for Gelhardt's winning goal in the dying minutes. I reckon that if Bamford can stay fit, Leeds will be safe. They're like a different team with him up top. He makes the right runs, he creates space, he holds up the ball, as well as just giving the centre-backs a really hard time. Actually, I don't know why Bielsa didn't let Gelhardt fill in for Bamford every game since his injury. But anyways, hopefully today's win, yeah, like you say, it will just be motivation that Leeds need, and maybe they can just bounce back and save themselves. I think the fight and the passion, it was definitely there from Leeds. Do they have enough quality to just keep them in the league for now? Like I said, I think if Bamford stays fit, I think if Calvin Phillips also makes up for that lost time, maybe they will. I feel bad that they sort of lost the spine of their squad due to injury, but I think Leeds have just reminded us with this Norwich performance that they have plenty of fight in them. And I think right now, confidence and fight in a relegation fight is everything. And if you look at them compared to Norwich, yeah, I think Leeds might be okay, you know.
Final game of part two and the relegation section, Pete, is Southampton 1, Watford 2. Watford found themselves in that block with Norwich prior to Roy Hodgson coming in of box tick, they're going down, doesn't matter what happens. But Roy Hodgson has kind of kept up his side of the bargain. He's made them harder to beat. He's conceded 50% the amount of goals that Ranieri conceded in his final seven games, just 8-7 prior to this one. And they caught Southampton half asleep, essentially. Some really bad defending for both goals, got two for Cucho Hernandez, and Southampton did give it a bit of a bash in the second 45, but ultimately Watford dug in and they got themselves a win. And they're not letting this go, and Roy Hodgson's got too much experience to just let this go. You look at the table, 29 games gone, 22 points on the board. Only Everton are above them on goal difference. There is then that little bit of a gap up to Leeds on 26, and you might say that might be a bit too much for overhaul. But all of these teams are looking at the situation now and saying, we don't need to be 16th or 15th, we just need to be 17th. And despite the fact, by all rights, Watford probably should already be down, with Hodgson and with these random results, they're still kind of in the running.
Oh yeah, it was a bolt out of the blue that victory, because the form that Southampton have been in of late, and the thing is again, just looking at the fixtures that are coming up, it's in their hands, because yeah, they've got Liverpool next, so you know, Roy Hodgson back at Anfield, that's not going to be pleasant, is it? You know, it could be a cricket score, but after that they got Leeds at home and Brentford at home. You know, get 4 points, 6 points there. You know, you can be above Everton with the games that they've got to come. And it's Roy is going to have to do. He's going to have to really, really sort of dig in here.
Real Houdini act.
Yeah,
if he gets them out.
You know, he's got previous to doing it. We've seen him do it before. He might have showed them up, but they're still conceding goals. You know, before the Southampton game, it was 4 at Wolves, and they were poor goals as well, like real poor defensive errors. 3 the game before against Arsenal. So he's got his work cut out there. I think perhaps when he took it, he thought, all right, I'll just see this through to the end of the season. They're pretty much down already, and then we'll work on next season. I don't know if he sort of banked for them actually being able to get out of it. And it's those two games coming up after the Liverpool game in mid-April. It's because they've got Man City after that, so if you get 6 points out of that, there's the start of your turnaround. They've got Burnley still to play as well before the end of the season at home. That's 3 games at home against all the teams that are around them, so it's in their hands, and they've only got themselves to blame if they do go down there.
Yeah, I think it would be the most Roy Hodgson thing on earth if he accidentally, politely saved them from relegation and then just apologised to everyone very, very nicely if Watford stayed in the Premier League. Right, just going to wrap up the way the table looks before we take a break. Brentford, we think they're moving into safe territory, so we're going to go from 16th downwards. Leeds in 16th, 29 games played, 26 points on the board. Everton in 17th, 26 games played, so they do have some game in hand for Frank Lampard, but 22 points on the table, and they are second bottom in the recent form rankings. Watford in 18th, 29 games played, 22 points, same as Everton, but a slightly worse goal difference. Burnley, 27 games, and 21 points. And then rock bottom Norwich, who, sorry Canaries fans, you would say probably are already down. 29 points, 29 games, 17 points, bottom of the table and bottom of the recent form table. Right, we are going to take a break. After the break, it's the final three games of the Premier League weekend. Liverpool winning away at Brighton and Arsenal and West Ham both picking up key home wins as they put the pressure on the top four. We're going to be talking about those games in just a second.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Welcome back to Sunday night's edition of the Football Social Daily. Three games to go as we look to wrap up this weekend's show. Pete, Brighton 0, Liverpool 2. Liverpool have been relegated to part three of the show because Manchester City are not playing until tomorrow. And in fairness, this was just another brick in the wall. They go 3 points behind Man City, level on games, putting the pressure on City and probably building towards that big showdown at the Etihad in April. So I want to actually talk about something off-field relating to Liverpool, and that's Mohamed Salah's contract situation. Now, he's been incredible for Liverpool this season in all competitions, banging in goals and raising his own personal level to be considered amongst Ronaldo, Messi, Lewandowski, Benzema, etc. But the contract situation is going to be a big subject in the next few weeks. He's got just over a year to go on his current deal. He's been very clear that he wants to stay at Liverpool, and quote, he said that he's not asking for anything ridiculous. Jurgen Klopp has said that obviously he wants to keep him at Anfield and that talks are ongoing. There's no pressure, there's no panic. But this is starting to creep up the news agenda, and Jurgen Klopp potentially is in a position to win four major trophies this season. How does he balance this? We talked about Tuchel managing a very different situation at Chelsea, but Jurgen Klopp needs to absolutely minimise the impact this is going to have whilst also ensuring that the whispers don't get too loud and Salah potentially leave.
Yeah, because it's this, you know, it's the end of next season, isn't it? The contract is he's contracted to. So, you know, you'd have to start thinking about selling him on if it's not gonna, because you can't let a player of that calibre go for free. It'd be, you know, it's
PSG are doing it with Mbappe.
Yeah, true. You know, there is an argument. I've seen it through getting the most out of him while you can. You know, commercially as well, because of his appeal in North Africa. But the thing is with Salah and this contract situation is it's not necessarily about the amount of money that Salah wants, and it never is in these sort of situations. It's parity in comparison to other players of his caliber and what he believes he's worth. And it's Salah is one of, if not the, you know, top strikers in the world. And he wants a pay structure that reflects that. That isn't unreasonable. If you're the best at anything, you want to be paid as if you are the best at that, no matter what, you know, no matter what profession that is. And yes, Liverpool have a much more stringent wage structure than other clubs. If this was any other club, he'd have been given a ridiculous contract already, you know, and he'd be signed up. But Liverpool have a much more stringent wage structure with things like this. And he knows that, you know, if you give it another year, the effects of the pandemic will have improved for other clubs, and Real Madrid might be, you know, Real Madrid might be a powerhouse again by that time, and have more money to spend and have a better squad, Barcelona, etc. So there are options available to him in a year's time. He's won everything there is to win at Liverpool, you know, major trophies wise. And he can still win plenty in the meantime. It's not like he owes anything to Liverpool to stick around. I've seen a lot of arguments. Does he want to chase the money, or does he want to be a hero? He already is a hero for what he's achieved. He already should be revered. And if he does leave at the end of next season on a free and goes to Real Madrid, he should get already planning his statue. You know, for his goal scoring record and what he's achieved at Liverpool, with minimal fuss. He's not come out. He's not. He's not. He's not caused much of a ruction over this. He just wants, and you know, his agent wants what he feels he's worth, and I think he has every right to. And if Liverpool aren't going to pay him that, then he's well within his rights to leave. And it's not a matter of chasing money. It's chasing what you. It's expecting to get a certain. To get your worth, essentially. So if you are one of the best players, you should be paid. You know, if Kevin De Bruyne is on $400,000 a week, you should be on as much as him, if not more. It's not the figure. It's the fact that if Liverpool are offering $150,000 a week less than Kevin De Bruyne, then they're saying that he's not as good, not as worth. He's not worth as much as Kevin De Bruyne, and that's wrong. So he has the status behind him. In these negotiations, the power is with Mo Salah in these situations, because he knows just how good he is and what he's worth to Liverpool. The signing of Luis Diaz will help and soften any blow that Salah could go, but Salah's worth to Liverpool is huge, and the club will know this, but they have to simply change their view on wages, because this is an exceptional, in exceptional circumstances you change your view on certain things, and this is an exceptional circumstances because he is an exceptional talent that you can't buy.
Liverpool look home and dry in terms of their top four finish, Isha, but Arsenal, West Ham, Manchester United, Spurs, etc. still have some work to go. Arsenal 2-0 win at Leicester today gets them back into the top four, and the pressure is not on them in the same way that it is on Manchester United and Tottenham and other teams, because it's a relatively young team, aside from one or two players. Mikel Arteta is a young manager that is pushing for his first ever season in the Champions League if he gets Arsenal into the competition next season. And looking at their recent run of form, they haven't lost in the Premier League since New Year's Day. They've won five in a row in the Premier League. And the most crucial aspect of this is, the games in hand. They keep coming up, whether it's the top of the table or the bottom of the table. They've got three games in hand on Manchester United in fifth and on West Ham in sixth. Now, even if they were to only win two of those three games, that would mean a 7-point lead on Manchester United, 8 points to overhaul them in the end of season running. I can't quite bring myself to say it just yet as an Arsenal fan, but it's on.
It is on, for sure. You know, I was at that Watford-Arsenal game. I was entertained all throughout. It was so good. Even, I think, okay, like you say, fifth straight victory for them. Thomas Partey was even outstanding today. I watched the game, but I checked the highlights as well, and the highlights didn't even do it justice. Arsenal just dominated most of the game. 15 points from five games. This is really a young side who are going forward. Aaron Ramsdale with that save against Leicester. Brendan Rodgers was even surprised. He applauded. Then I just think Ramsdale, one of many, he's got such a bright future ahead of him. I can't wait to see him in his prime. Like I said, Partey and even Odegaard, they put in a really great performance. 3 points in the bag. They're really on a roll. And I think for the first time, I mean, I'm not an Arsenal fan, but you can confirm whether or not you think this is right. For the first time in a long time, I think Arsenal fans are actually really excited about this Arsenal team, and you guys should be. Some of the individual skill and passing in the midfield for Arsenal recently, it's been simply incredible. Odegaard has really changed the team, I think. Him and Saka, just so important for the Gunners. And yeah, it's funny actually, because I guess I was on the pod a few months ago. I remember there was so much talk about Aubameyang, and in a way, now I'm thinking all of that controversy has cleared and sort of made way for this new, young engine. You know, we've still got you guys have still got leaders on the pitch, Lacazette being one of them. By the way, I'm absolutely delighted that he took that penalty and scored, because I've got him in my FPL team. I was like, yeah, get in. But yeah, like leaders like that, and then the spine being so young and so promising with so much potential. I think there's a certain innocence and bravery, and I guess there's more of a valiant effort that comes from the younger players who probably haven't experienced as many hardships. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know, there's
yeah.
kind of bravery, like I used to see it a lot with Matty Longstaff at Newcastle. He was the only one that would actually really give it a go, because he didn't know as much as the experienced players when it comes to letdowns and disappointment and failing. And I see that with Arsenal. And yeah, I mean, wow, you guys are really fun to watch these days, and you're going to be fine.
Final game of the weekend, West Ham 2, Aston Villa 1, Pete. West Ham are not giving up this race for top four or even for top six. Defeat away in midweek to Sevilla in the Europa League. They bounce back. You expected all the usual excuses to be trotted out, travelling, tiredness, and this wasn't a great game, but they did enough. Andrei Yarmolenko returning to the team, really emotional day for him as he knocked in a brilliant goal, and then it was difficult for him at full time, but small bit of positivity for him in playing a key role in them winning this. The sensation is that they probably will get squeezed out of the top four, but the grit and the battle that they're showing to make sure that they won't have United or Arsenal having anything easy is really, really admirable.
Oh yeah, and you know, if this was another manager, if this was a younger unknown manager, then you know they'd be calling him a genius. But because it's David Moyes and he's still tarnished with that brush that you know from this ill-fated year at Manchester United, that he doesn't get the praise he deserves. He's done a great job. He's done a fantastic job with. It's such a difficult job as well. It's such a difficult place to manage. Like the fans don't want to be in the stadium that they're in. When things go wrong, the owners are targeted. The manager's targeted. It's a big job with huge expectations, and he's managed it brilliantly. And he's made some fantastic tactical innovations. You know, like turning Mikel Antonio into the striker that he is, out of nowhere, really. You know, just these are the sort of things that people take for granted that are forgotten about. But he's done a fantastic job, and yeah, they won't go away, and it's. It's kind of like the pressure's off now, which the hard work's done. You know, even if they have a disastrous end to the season, it's still going to be a positive season for them, considering they'll still finish high enough to have, you know, for it to be judged a positive season. So now it's, we've got this far, let's really go for it, let's really push for it, let's go at Sevilla in the Europa League, let's have a real goal, let's, you know, the pressure is off, nobody expects us to do anything, so let's have a real go, and the pressure's on the big teams, and you know, they're all taking turns to mess it up for themselves, really. And I don't want to worry you, Fergal, but we, you know, we've been here before, haven't we, with Arsenal?
I don't think we've been here before with Arsenal being in this position.
Well, there you go. You've done it. You've fallen into the trap. You're in.
I believe my own hype.
You think that,
I'm not taking anything for granted. I'm just looking at the numbers. Three games in hand. And then we see where we land. We only play Liverpool and United, the teams that are in and around us between now and the end of the season. No cups, no Europe. I'm not saying it. That's why I gave Isha free rein. I'm not saying it. I'm just presenting the numbers.
Yeah, I know, but I know exactly what you're implying. I know what you're trying to do. Look, this can still come back to bite you. I know exactly what you're trying to imply.
Oh, we can, yeah.
I think that Arsenal have still got this within them to mess it up. I don't think they've completely turned the corner.
Shots
fired.
I don't think
they've completely turned the corner yet. I think Arsenal will finish fourth, but I think why they'll finish fourth is because others around them will continue to mess up. I don't think it will be all Arsenal's own doing that they secure the top four spot.
Well, I'll take that backhanded compliment. I'll tell you what, Pete, I'll make you a deal, and anyone listening to this can rewind this and play it back to us. If Arsenal get top four and Manchester United don't, then I promise we won't buy Ronaldo off you. You can keep him. Okay, that's the promise that I'll make to you right
here,
right now.
You heard it here first, guys.
You heard it here first. Yeah, yeah. I promise we won't do that. But we are going to call it a day for Sunday's edition of the Football Social Daily. Another busy weekend. Lots of chopping and changing at the top and the bottom. We're probably not going to have anything settled in terms of any of the races until the final few weeks of the season. But as always, here on FSD, we'll be with you every step of the way. Don't forget to hit subscribe up the top there, and you can get access to a brand new show every single day. The guys will be back tomorrow previewing Manchester City against Crystal Palace, building up to the midweek Champions League action, and also yet more Premier League action. Pete, Isha, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us on.
Great stuff indeed, guys. And thanks so much for listening, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.